right. So tonight I'd like to talk about the six precepts. Okay. So before we go into that, just to kind of frame this class and where we've been going. So it's been very much an internally focused class. Like, how do we learn to meet our own experience, to meet this breath, this body sensation, this thought, you know, and start to, we've been kind of hinting around how we can use those same tools to look at some much more complex, you know, issues, belief systems, you know, stances around relationships, around how we relate to life itself. Learning how to do that, we've learned how to connect with the body, connect with breath, let go of thought, you know, learn that difference between thinking and direct experience. Our instructions went from very narrow, one point of focus, to much more broad, including tonight, opening to choiceless awareness. You know, hearing that sense of non letting awareness, things arise of their own will and pass away, kind of resting in this field of awareness. So this is a little bit more advanced. It's a little bit more of a stretch, perhaps. But I like to present it so you start to recognize it when maybe that naturally arises, or when you hear it other times in your future meditation training and experience. Now tonight, though, we're going to explore in the talk how meditation really is designed to go into our lives, to how we make choices we make, how we interact with other people, and not to keep it just internally focused, but use that internal focus to transform how we are in the world. Our decisions, our choices, our relationships, our roles. How does that actually meditation come to bear? And one way is around these precepts. Because if meditation doesn't translate into our lives, it has a very limited scope. As limited benefit. You know, so how do we actually communicate? How do we actually deal with a relationship issue? How do we fight injustice in the world? How do I earn a living? These are all ways that the practice can come into our lives. Now, the Buddha was very clear that this meditation practice is just one part of an overall practice. He often framed it in terms of the Eightfold Noble Path. We have the meditation that we've been learning is one piece. There's also how we act in the world. And there's also the quality of our wise, of our intention. So not only our meditation, but also our actions and how that translates. Now, this class isn't meant to make people Buddhist or to convert anybody from whatever spirituality or religious, you know, resonance you have in your lives. It's more about presenting just a way of seeing your experience. And so whatever spirituality or religious you have or don't have, it can be beneficial. And so tonight, I want to, that being said, I want to focus on what's called the five precepts. These are the ethical trainings that as Buddhists we take on. And it's something that you can see as you hear them. They're very common to other religious traditions. Again, this isn't about becoming religious. It's really a way of having our actions become based in non-harm. Based in non-harm. So it's not any kind of faith-based, or just really seeing internally how our actions create more noise, more unrest, or also more stillness. More calm, more ease. Now, many of us, when we hear the word ethics, it can be a little bit of a charged topic, because perhaps we've been wounded by ethics being externally focused, like we shall do this, the shalt nots, the guilt and punishment, this concept of sin and sinner. So all that I'm not talking about at all in this approach, or never do really. One of our early teachers, Christina Feldman, from the West, she once did a retreat titled Ethics, and only like two people signed up for it. So part of it's like that sense of not, you know, wanting to engage in that seems too dry or so, uninspiring. Yet ethics can really give our practice a sense of container and how we are in the world. And I love to talk about ethics in terms of our internal relationship to them. how we relate to them from our own experience. Because we're training ourselves to be more and more sensitive to our inner environment. You start to notice that when you're saying something that's untrue, you feel the resonance or the dissonance more clearly. When you start to do something that's harmful, you start to feel that echo more clearly in your own body. And as a meditator, you become less able to ignore that. Sometimes we can, you know, we can say, oh, I'm just going to overlook that and not address that. But we start to resonate and see that more and more clearly. Another teacher, Ruth Dennison, said that once you start to meditate, you find you can't get away with anything. Not meaning that someone's going to like watch your every action, but just internally, your own, so you know for yourself, you can't lie to yourself. You can't deceive yourself like the way you used to be able to. And this is really this cultivation of sensitivity, of inner awareness. And so all the skills, all the things we've learned in the class come to bear on this. Now, often our actions arise from reactivity. Someone says something, we feel this impulse to act in response to that. And as meditators, we've really learned this art of the pause, the ability to slow down and reflect. Okay, is this action really going to be helpful for me or for someone else? It could be something with our work, could be something with our job, and it could be something around harm or non-harm. So this slowing down and paying attention creates this pause, this little bit of a pause, so we can observe and see what's here. Stephen Covey quoted Viktor Frankl from this little quote, who survived the concentration camps in the Second War. Between stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space is our power to choose our response. In our response lies our growth and our freedom. So between stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space is our power to choose our response. In our response lies our growth and our freedom. This quote sums up this approach to ethics. They feel that pause, and then in that pause, there's that choice. We don't have that pause, we go into reactivity. We go into lashing out. We go into harm. So remember that example of that coil of rope. When you see in the distance, you start to think it's a snake, and you make this whole mind storm around it, and you start to act from that mind storm. So coming back to the pause, you say, okay, there's something there, and I feel the fear of a snake, and I just stay at that level, and I start to look more closely, okay, see more clearly. Same thing when someone gets an email that's distressing or is charged, to pause. Just take a few moments or a few minutes or a few days to feel what that elicits, to observe that. It allows the clarity of mind to come through. And this is really the big kind of simple way of talking about Buddhist ethics is how can we live a life based in non-harm, not harming other creatures and ourselves, other beings. And when we start to do this, we actually start to find our actions translate that way, not from an external impose, but internally coming that way. We start to notice we become quieter inside. There's a way that we start to relax a little bit more. Their minds aren't so active. We start to realize, okay, I'm living a life that's not churning things up. Because when we have those edges of causing harm, it creates an internal chatter. And we start to recognize that more and more. So let me talk about these. There's five precepts that we'll explore, these ethical trainings. And I can remember the invitation is to come them from the internal, you know, from our own growing wisdom and compassion, to allow those to be what informs us instead of someone, an authority telling you that you should do them. And the fundamental skill is the meditator's trade of noticing, of observing, of seeing clearly how things are. And so as I touch on each one, the invitation for us tonight is to notice what arises in you. And to notice, okay, is there a way of oh, I don't really like that one, or I don't, that feels beneath me, or, you know, offensive. Yeah, I really like that one. Or I've been really harmed from that not being followed. Is there a tightening? Is there a defensiveness? Is there a shutting down, checking, or checking out? Or is there a sense of relaxation, a sense of ease? Not to judge any of those responses, but just to notice what arises. That's information, just like the question around the news fast. You see how we're trying to bring that into our lives. So you can translate. You have that same skill into relating to another person in whatever scope that might be. Noticing it without judgment, with curiosity and openness. Now these precepts have this phrasing, which I think is kind of interesting. Start with this undertaking the training. Okay, that this is a training. It is a practice. It is something that's often challenging to follow these. That we do fail as human beings and we still have this intention to follow. And they're also phrased as to refrain from, which is different than shalt not. There's not that heavy, hard-handed, sin and sinner kind of stance on that. Because sometimes harm is unavoidable. And we'll give some examples around that. Okay, so that's kind of the preamble. So the first precept is to refrain from killing, from harm. Okay, so again, notice the internal reaction and what comes up around that. And I think, most of us perhaps have not killed another human being or don't have that impulse to do that. Perhaps I don't want to assume each person's history. We can often take it more subtly. How often do we see a mosquito biting us and we quickly slap that mosquito without even realizing we're taking another being's life? And just to pause and notice, is there another way to relate to it? Is there another option? The story I like to say around this is when my daughter was like a toddler, we had this wasp nest, a really big one, is about as big as that. Maybe not quite that big, so it's about this big. And I was concerned that she and her little friends would get bit by this, so I wanted to discourage the wasp nest from being there. But I also wanted to follow this precept of non-harm. And so being a lot younger and perhaps not as wise, I thought, okay, I'm going to just knock it down and run away really quickly. That way, I'll really minimize how much harm I cause, but still protect my daughter. But those wasps really liked that spot. It was on a roadie by our window, and it grew. They built it just as big again. So I thought, okay, well, let's do something a little more drastic. So again, I'm not recommending you try this, but again, trying to point out the intention of not harm. I forgot about not harm for myself, but I got a trash barrel and put it under the nest, and I knocked the nest down and then covered it up and took it to the park in a remote place and released it. And I didn't get stung for some reason. I don't know how. And they came back, a third time. So finally I got the can of Raid and I sprayed the nest. But it was really amazing to watch the different relationship with killing those insects. Instead of being like, they don't have a right to exist. They don't have a right to be here. I'm just going to wipe them out. And that self-righteousness or the discounting of that, not even talking about it, but actually really take in that these creatures are dying and feel that sadness, feel that sorrow. So the same thing with, with termites, with pests. So sometimes we do have to take another creature's life, but to do it with our eyes wide open, to be very present for that and to see if there's other options. And then take this also, I like to say non-harm with this one also, the ways we cause harm to other people in subtle ways, cause harm to ourselves. How often do we have a self-critical thought, a thought of self-hatred or self-dislike? And just to pause with that. Remember that technique of pausing, observing, and seeing if there's another way of relating to that. Your mind's going to come up with times of hostility, of harm, of lashing out. This is how we're wired. But if we're able to observe it, we don't have to act from it. We can actually see it clearly. And then from that pause, the response comes. The next precept, so that's the first one, refraining from killing other beings. The second one is to refrain from stealing. Again, noticing the internal noise, whatever might come up around that. I notice that when I do stealing in small ways, there's often a justification that comes up. I can justify that behavior. Like, no one's going to really notice if I go by the sample table and take an extra helping or something. You know, just we justify it. I remember many years ago when I worked for the Forest Service, you know, there's some extra topo maps, and I took some, and I justified that internally because, oh, I do all this extra work for free. They won't notice it. And you can see the noise that gets generated. And now as I've trained my mind and really learned to focus on that, when I feel that impulse to take something that's not freely given and offered, and I follow that and don't follow it, I release that, there's a stillness that comes. There's a way of being more settled, more quiet. And you start to see that more and more clearly. That becomes this guide. I go this way, it leads to more agitation. This way, leads to more calm, more stillness. We start to value that internal ease much more over whatever that object may give us. This is really a shift from the self-focus, the selfish perspective, to seeing the whole, seeing how our actions affect everyone else. The third precept is to refrain from sexual harm and misconduct. Now, sex is often a kind of a taboo topic. We don't tend to talk about it very openly and clearly, but it's a fundamental part of being human. You know, it's part of that humanity. But how often does sexuality cause harm? You know, there's the overt way of assaults and abuse. But there's also the subtle ways that we sexualize people and hold them in a particular stance based on our wants, our needs, our desires. So learning to see, when you work with this precept, of course, there's the overt ways of harm, and also whether you allow yourself to be harmed. You know, having those sense of boundaries and taking care of yourself, having that sense of consensualness is so vital. And start to see the person as a whole, see the whole person, not just the sexuality, but that's part of this whole package that you're relating to. And noticing how our society tends to train us around how we relate to other people. You know, regardless of whatever sexual orientation you have, there's a way that we train to like certain people, not like other people. Notice how that is really seeing that person in a very narrow way. So refraining from sexual harm and misconduct. The fourth precept is to refrain from lying. From saying something which is untrue. This is such a great practice to take this on, is to notice that internal dissonance. You know, what's actually true in this moment as I'm speaking? You know, what's not true? You know, how does that relate? How does that come up? And also realizing that just because something's true, that we don't necessarily, it's appropriate to say it. To understand it also has to have this sense of beneficialness to that person. The Buddha held beneficial in a very high bar that led to that person's liberation. You know, so it's sometimes like that discernment. Okay, even though this may seem true, at least in my mind's relative truth, there's still this discernment around it. But on the other hand, when we actually say something that's untrue, notice when you say that, whether it's just a little bit of a white lie or a shading of the truth, or you know, you're having a horrible day and someone asks, how your day is? Oh, it's good. You know, I do that all the time. that's not maybe not appropriate to say this is the worst day of my life or whatever it might be. But just notice how that resonates, how that feels internally. You see the internal skills of observation start to translate in how we speak, how we act in the world. And the final precept is to refrain from substances that cause intoxication and heedlessness. Okay, so this one, can be charged for some of us. If we are used to, we like substances, we like alcohol, we like whatever it might be. And the reason that this precept is there is because when we're intoxicated, it's much easier to break all the other precepts. It's much easier to cause harm. And, we don't have to look far to see many examples of that, maybe in our own lives, in our friends' lives, and in society. We lose judgment, control. And I think a key piece of this one is when it leads to heedlessness. So like a glass of wine or whatever substance you might have, there's a point where you can still have that clarity of mind. And there's a point where you start to lose that and to start to value that, to become more aware of that. And of course, the substances make it harder to bring that quality of mindfulness, of awakefulness. The observation becomes clouded. And that's why this is such a emphasized one. So these five precepts: to refrain from killing, refrain from stealing, from sexual harm, misconduct, to refrain from lying and from substances which cause intoxication. This is part of the more Buddhist part of things as we're talking. We can also see how they're also just good ways to live in the world. And you can start to notice when you go against those precepts, it causes harm internally and externally. So life's constantly giving us choices to act in a wise way or unwise way, to act from compassion or from hatred, from non-harm or from harm. Now, between stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space is our power to choose our response. In our response lies our growth and our freedom. See, this pause, this space, is what we cultivate as meditators. We practice it in a formal way, but then we're meant to bring that into the spin of life, the busyness of life. The pause can just be a few seconds, just a moment of checking in to see what's here in this body. Is the thing I'm about to say, about to do, does it lead to that quality of settledness, of groundedness, or does it lead to more agitation? And this starts to turn of all life into learning, an opportunity to actually explore and learn more about myself and how I am in the world. It doesn't matter what is here. I can see it. I can sense it. I can be present for it. We just learn to meet it with steady, non-judgmental attention. This is one of the keys to letting life come into our practice, to take meditation off the cushion into our lives. Just that quality of curiosity, of paying attention. All right, so let's just sit quietly for a few moments, letting those words settle.